This is a presentation from Narara Valley Baptist Church, a church that's desperate for God and passionate for people.
I want to share some thoughts with you this morning on a passage from Mark. It's a passage where Jesus walks on water, where the disciples are in the boat. I'll read that in a moment to you, the whole story. But as I was preparing for this, I was quite focused on this whole concept of this. This is a story about fear, about the disciples being afraid in the middle of the storm and stuff. And then as I got my heart and my mind around it, pictured myself in that story more, I actually realized this, for me personally, this wasn't a story about fear, it actually became a story about courage. So I know the Holy Spirit, often he reveals different things to us, and I don't know what you will be hearing this morning as I share this, but my prayer was as well that this would be a story for you as well, that actually would be a story of courage for you, that would be encouraging to you as we look at that. And when I think about courage, I think the basic thing as well, we need to talk about fear a little. I looked it up in a dictionary. Fear, it's the unpleasant emotion caused by the threat of danger, pain, or harm. Being afraid of someone or something that is likely to be dangerous, painful, or harmful. You know, and I don't know about you, but when I think about some of the things that I fear or that we fear, in principle, in my experience, sometimes fear is actually a good thing because it keeps me safe. Fear can keep us from making bad or unhealthy decisions, damaging decisions. Fear can protect us and others from getting hurt. I was just recently skiing a few weeks ago. And you know, you've got the green runs and the blue runs and the black runs, and the black ones are the really steep ones with the rocks and the trees and the ice. I'm a fairly good skier, but I know with skiing, I know my limitations. So just from the fear of getting hurt or running into the rock, I stayed away from some of the runs. Fear, principally, is a good thing. You know, fear or a healthy respect of something or a foresight that we gained through maybe experience, good experience, bad experience, our experience, experience of other people, combined with a bit of wisdom, what we learned from that, can adjust our actions that we might do otherwise. And it can be a great guide. Fear can be a great guide to safety, to peace, to health, to well-being. So some of our fears are about basic survival or pain avoidance. Other fears are literally maybe more in our mind. You know, I don't know about you, but when I see a picture of a spider, or living back at the coast now, cockroach country, we didn't have that much in Ballarat actually. There are lots of spiders, but not many cockroaches, but it just gives me the shivers, okay? So there's some stuff in the mind. Some fears also can hold us back from actually experiencing something better or something that's important or something that's very rich in our life. Fears can hold us back maybe to go to places where we need to go. Some fears come from very deep places. I don't know, but in our team, we talk about the Enneagram, which is kind of a bit of an ancient way of actually do a bit of personality typing. So there's 9 different personalities, and all these different personality types kind of have a bend towards a certain fears. So there's the improver. The underlying fear is imperfection, of maybe being seen, of not doing the right thing. Then there's the helper. The underlying fear of the helper is being unloved or unwanted, saying kind of, I'm not enough. I have to do more. The achiever, the fears of not being valued or of underachieving. The individualist, being abandoned by God or other people, maybe because you're misunderstood or you're stereotyped, just what I'm doing right now. The investigator, your fear might be that you won't be functioning successfully unless you actually get all the information together. Then you have another one, personality, the loyalist. The core fear is that everything will go wrong. Anybody? I'm sure there's a few here. The enthusiast, the underlying fear is pain. You fear not having enough options. You're missing out on new experiences, or you're getting trapped by routine. Then you have the challenger, the boss. Your underlying fear is being hurt or controlled. And then last, the peacemaker. The underlying fear is being separated from others. So you try to do everything you can to keep the peace. So deeply personality. Then you have the phobias. Now I thought about phobias, and you know, some are very extreme and some are maybe a bit, you have maybe learned to cope with them. Phobias are relentless fear, a dread of something that is perceived as a danger of some sort. And so you go to great lengths to avoid it. Different kinds of fears or phobias. Do you know what an arachnophobia is? Spiders. Claustrophobia. Yep, fear of small spaces. Monophobia. Fear of being alone. Now, a trypanophobia. Fear of needles. I know a thing about that. And then we have another one, and I'm wondering if somebody's brave enough to try actually to pronounce this. If you put it up on the screen, please. Who wants to have a crack at this? Over there? Okay.
Hippopotamonstrosis quipipedia delophobia.
Yeah, come on. Not the golf clapping. This deserves a real shout out. Well done. Any guess of what the fear is? It's a fear of long words. It's apparently a real fear. Which, English being my second language, I probably can relate to that too. Look, I personally, I have a few fears in my life that actually had or have the potential to really hold me back to go to the place where I'm meant to be. One of my fear, growing up, I remember being in the school choir, and we have the performance, and I'm up on stage. I was always the little one, so you're always right at the front. All the choir there, and we start singing. All eyes on me. And man, I started sweating, and I started feeling nauseous. And after the second song, my mom had to take me out of the room. Because by nature, I have a bit of a glossophobia, which is actually a fear of public speaking. Now, sometimes we are able to learn to cope with our phobias. Sometimes we learn to overcome them, or sometimes we kind of maybe learn to manage them. Okay, another couple of my fears. One is a nyctophobia and an equinophobia. Nyctophobia is the fear of darkness. And the equinophobia is a fear of horses. Now, one of them, one of these two, I still have. The other one, I had a quite an amazing encounter with God, and it was taken from me. Let me tell you one story, and you have a guess which one is still there. Now, in 2014, my daughter got into horse riding. We had about 20 minutes from home. We had a guy had moved from the Northern Territory. He had been a station manager, so a real, like a, what do you call him, a stockman, through and through in Australia. And he offered horse riding lessons and horsemanship as well, not just the lessons. So I would take my daughter there once a week or once every fortnight, and she would learn lessons. And I thought, okay, I'm really afraid of these horses. And so my daughter was able, she was probably 8 years old, 7 years old, 8 years old. She was really doing well there. And I thought, oh, maybe one way of overcoming my fear of horses is actually to take some lessons. So I committed to 3 lessons. Can you show the next picture? And the next one, because it didn't go that well. I ended up finding myself on a bucking horse and I fractured the vertebrae. I was basically lying on the ground for about 20 minutes until the ambulance came and I had trouble breathing. This is at the end of a 7-year study time of becoming a pastor, about a month before I started my first kind of calling down in Ballarat as a full-time pastor. You can only imagine what went through my head in this time. I was sucking in every little breath and tried to breathe out, and I was struggling, and I thought I was dying. Now, what's your guess? Still afraid of horses or not? I am still. I'm terrified of horses. The other story about the darkness is a longer story, maybe for another day, but a miracle happened there. You know, sometimes we have to listen to that feeling of fear because the hesitation that it gives us might keep us safe. Sometimes we have to overcome our fears so we can go towards the places that God might want us to go. And sometimes as well, I wanna just throw that in as well. Sometimes when our fears, our anxiety, maybe even post-traumatic stress, when that actually starts affecting our life, our physical health, our mental health, our emotional health, our relationships, we actually need to find help outside of that. You know, when I reflect on courage and fear from my own experience in this story, in the Bible, throughout what we learn, I don't think there is a one-fit-all approach. And so overcoming fear by courage is sometimes a bit more complicated than it seems. I think as Christians, there's another fear that I found. I just have a look where I find that. It's actually a fear of fear. I think it's Christians sometimes because we're so wanting to have faith and trust that sometimes we can actually fear to admit we have fear. Because that might be interpreted as not having enough faith or not trusting in God. I just want to put that out there as well. As Christians, we don't have to be afraid of fear, because throughout the Bible, we read the stories. We read of people that were godly people that God loved, that had a heart for God, and they were still afraid. And it's okay. God's word teaches us and tells us many stories. You know what I can learn from God's word is as well that. That fear and courage doesn't distinct between rich and poor. It's experienced by kings and by beggars. It's experienced by warriors and shepherds, leaders and followers, and even by the people closest to Jesus. Let me just read you the story from Mark 6, 45 to 56. You can grab your Bible if you want, but if you just want to listen, if you just want to be in the moment, that's okay too. So Mark 6, 45 to 56, and that continues in our series where we go through Mark. I'm starting from verse 45 in the second part. Immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to Bethsaida. So this is basically continuing from feeding the 5,000 that we heard last week. 5,000 were fed, the miracle happened, and immediately after that, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat. While he dismissed the crowd, after leaving them, he went up on the mountainside to pray. Later that night, the boat was in the middle of the lake and he was alone on land. He saw the disciples straining at the oars because the wind was against them. Shortly before dawn, he went out to them walking on the lake. He was about to pass by them, but when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost. They cried out because they all saw him and were terrified. Immediately he spoke to them and said, "Take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid." Then he climbed into the boat with them, and the wind died down. They were completely amazed, for they had not understood about the loaves. Their hearts were hardened. When they had crossed over, they landed at Gennesaret and anchored there. As soon as they got out of the boat, people recognized Jesus. They ran throughout that whole region and carried the sick on mats to whatever they heard he was. And wherever he went, into villages, towns, and countryside, they placed the sick in the marketplace. They begged him to let them touch even the edge of his cloak. And all who touched him were healed. I just want to go through that and just share a few thoughts. You know, going back to verse 45, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat. You know, the disciples grew up in Bethsaida where they went. They spent days and weeks and years on this lake. But this concept of Jesus made them get in the boat, it's almost like he insisted. He pushed them in the boat. I can imagine he might even pushed him, shoved him in the boat, and then he gave the boat a shove just so left. We don't really know why he had to make them get in the boat. Maybe they didn't want to leave because of what just happened, the miracle. Maybe they just wanted to stay with Jesus. Maybe because they were fishermen and knew, they saw the storm clouds. They saw it was getting dark. Maybe they said that this is not a good idea. Fear keeps us safe. This is not a good idea. I don't know why, but he made his disciples to get into the boat. You know, I don't know if you've been or you are involved deeply in ministry. You know, I think sometimes, I don't know for you, but for me, it can feel like Jesus actually, I don't know if I want to go there, but Jesus keeps pushing. And he puts me in the boat and he gives it a little kick. So I'm on my way. There's a bit of a sense of urgency or pressure from Jesus. It seems they were reluctant, but Jesus insisted they go. And then verse 36, after leaving them, he went up on the mountainside to pray. You know, we don't know exactly what he prayed. But if you look at Jesus, if you look at other prayers, like I can imagine that he was seeking the closeness to his Father. There was stuff on his heart, stuff on his mind. He wanted to talk about it. In John 6, we read that just before that, the people wanted to make him king. When the miracle happened with the loaves and people saw that, they wanted to make him king. A king after their own picture, you know, like not the king that Jesus was, but they wanted him to be the king of their people. Just maybe they had David as a king. Maybe he needed to go away and talk about this. Maybe he prayed for his disciples so his disciples would actually understand what kind of king he really was. There's this story of the Old Testament scholar George Adam. He went to Switzerland and he hired a guide. And he went up a mountain twice the size or twice the height of Mount Kosciuszko, a mountain called the Weisshorn. And They climbed it on a site that was sheltered from the wind, but there was quite a gale force wind happening on the other side. And when they reached the top, he was so excited about getting to the top of that mountain and finally maybe getting on the top and seeing that amazing scenery that he jumped up behind a rock and was almost blown over the edge by that wind. And the guide pulled him down and he screamed at him. He said, "You fool, get on your knees." And he pulled him down on his knees out of the wind. You know, maybe Jesus knew that the safety and what he needed can sometimes only be found on our knees before our Father. You're only safe here on your knees. Later that night, the boat was in the middle of the lake, which is about maybe 4, 5, 6 km into the lake. And he was still alone on land. He saw the disciples straining. They were troubled. They were putting their muscle work in, straining at the oars because the wind was against them. You know, the courage I take of that is that we find ourselves in the storms. It might not seem that straight away he comes, and we might have to struggle for a while. I think from when I read this story, I think they were out in the lake most of the night. Jesus saw them. Jesus always sees our struggles. He sees our storms. He sees us, even when it seems that he's not right there with us. His focus was upon those who were undergoing this difficulty. Because, why were they in difficulty in the first place? Because they showed trust and obedience to Christ. They didn't want to go. He made them go. Can you relate to that sometimes? Where you actually trust, you obey Jesus, what you think you're meant to do, and then you find yourself in a storm. It is difficult, but you're exactly where you're meant to be. Jesus is not turning a blind eye. Then shortly before dawn, he went out to them, walking on lake. So the whole night they're straining, he's praying, and just before dawn, he comes out there. Jesus lived in constant prayer. You know, I bet he prayed up there that he would be able to live out his mission. Maybe he prayed that his disciples would keep safe, that they would learn a lesson from this, maybe. He was praying for his disciples in the boat, maybe, just as he's praying for you and I, for us as a church. You know, in 1 Timothy, we read that there's one mediator between God and people, and that's Christ. Romans 8, he's interceding for us. John 17, Jesus said, "But my prayer is not for them alone, for the disciples, but for all who would believe through my disciples' testimony." Jesus is interceding for you and I right now. In heaven, next to God's throne, he's praying. He's seeing you and I. So then the weird thing happens. He finally gets out there, he gets close to the boat, and he walks past them. He was about to pass them, not sure why, but when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost. There's a phobia as well, by the way, about ghosts, possibly related to darkness. So they freaked out because for some reason I think they didn't expect him to be there. So they saw somebody there and they thought it's a ghost. Probably from maybe their upbringing, their the history where water sometimes was kind of related to places where there are ghosts or demonic activity. So they freaked out and they were terrified. You know, the storm wasn't just on the lake. I think the storm was in their hearts as well in that moment. And I don't know if you can relate to that right now or in the past, or there's stuff where there's a storm brewing in our hearts. Maybe it's related to what happens on the outside. Maybe it's just there. And that happened to them. Great courage for me. These are the people who hung out with Jesus every day. And they experienced it. And what's the most encouraging thing for me, I think, is to see Jesus' heart in this. Because he didn't rebuke them or thought, oh man, this is hopeless. Picked the wrong people. He didn't. So they were terrified. They thought they saw a ghost. And immediately he spoke to them and said, take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid. You know, David, King David, in the Old Testament, he's described as a man according to God's own heart. God loved him. He saw David's heart. And there's these amazing psalms in there that David wrote, and that kind of, I think, reflect a lot of the storms that went on in David's life and in David's heart. And I just want to read this one to you. Just listen. Just close your eyes if you like. Just listen. But see if sometimes you can find yourself in that. Psalm 13. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and every day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? Look on me and answer, O Lord. Give light to my eyes or I will sleep in death. My enemy will say I have overcome him, and my foes will rejoice when I fall. You know, I think one of the biggest encouragements and the biggest lessons I've learned in my life, and from those stories as well, is that when those storms are happening in my life, in my heart, when there's this uproar and I'm straining on the oars, on the oars, when I'm finding myself far away from the shore, way out there, and I get that feeling settling, where I wonder, is God here? Is he ever gonna come and do something? What always helps me personally is to look for Jesus in the middle of that. You know, it sometimes is, we find what we're looking for. I don't know if it ever happened to me. Back many years ago in Coffs Harbour, we went to the beach and had my stuff with me. And when we went to the car, I realized that my car key wasn't there anymore. Big old beach, little old car key. It wasn't the you know, the clicker ones. It was the old ones where you had actually to go to the door and open it. It didn't have the big black thing with the buttons. Just a little car key. Ford Falcon XF, 1986 station wagon. My first six-cylinder car. You didn't know them in Germany. All four-cylinder, economical, and then this big old thing. So I went to the beach and I thought, this is impossible. How can I find this little car key? And a friend of mine and I, we scanned the beach and we walked back and forth and we had the eyes fixed on the ground and we walked and we prayed. And I see a little silver thing sticking out of the sand. It was my car key. You know, I bet if I wouldn't have known what I'm looking for, I could have spent the whole day on the beach and walked by that little silver thing probably 100 times without actually noticing it. I think that's what maybe the disciples didn't do. They did not expect Jesus in the middle of that storm. They didn't look for him. Or maybe they had given up. Maybe they had conversations and said, man, where's Jesus? Is he coming? And hour after hour goes and he's not coming. And maybe they had stopped looking and so what they saw, they thought can only be a ghost. Don't give up looking for Jesus when you're in the middle of the storm. That's my encouragement here. You know, because something amazing happens when you look for Jesus and you learn what his voice sounds like. And in the middle of the uproar, in the middle of the wrestle, day and night, suddenly you hear him saying to you, take courage, it is I, don't be afraid.
This has been a presentation from Narara Valley Baptist Church, a church that's desperate for God and passionate for people. To continue the conversation, we invite you to join us Sundays at 9:30 a.m. and 5 p.m. or on our website at www.nvbc.info.